Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Shift Drinked on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Matthew Ramsey, cheeseburger life coach, enchilada coordinator, and patron of the Mezcal Arts.
And I'm Eddie Kim, incoherent ranter, nightlife ambassador, and pretty much a jet-lagged barman about town. Every week, we share a shift drink and swap war stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, and brewers, and pretty much anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry. This week, we are joined by Gelato Baron, Weed Whisperer, and Psychedelic Dad, Rob Duncan of
That's
Dolcezza.
That's so good, man. You could just leave it enchilada, michelada if you yeah. want. I like that. That's good, man. It's a great description.
Welcome, Rob, and welcome back, Eddie Kim.
Oh, yes. I just came back from a two-week trip from to L.A., Seoul, and Tokyo. So I'm still a little bit jet-lagged, a little bit of a delay, but I am now back in the seat, no longer hologram.
You're back in the saddle, and we're drinking again.
Right.
Now, listeners, in case you couldn't tell, we're in season two officially. That's right. We did it. After a dramatic pause of exactly 1 week, we're back with all new things, which means everything is different.
New cliffhangers.
For starters, yeah. Eddie Kim is no longer a hologram. Mm.
I'm a Cylon now.
Titillating.
Matt actually has shaved his mustache. He is bare.
I got a whole new season two radio face.
Streamlined for
the girl
aerodynamic.
Like it? The girl like your face?
I think
she wants you to hide again?
I think she's being nice.
Yeah?
But she's never seen my upper lip before, so... There's an adjustment.
Your upper lip looks good, man. Yeah.
Hey,
like
thank
nice.
You. No
like
hideous moles
lip.
Or anything.
Yeah. It's a new perspective on life. I'm looking at other people's upper lips now in comparison.
Accentuates your nose hair, though.
Yeah. Upper lips are now on your radar.
Yeah,
as
upper
you
lip
go
analysis.
Around the town. I like your lip.
Yeah.
Oh, upper lip sweat. Do you actually sweat up there?
Oh, yeah. You're very much so. That's a.
Gotta take a hanky around with you, I guess.
Yeah, that's going to be my new thing. You're going to see me dabbing all around town. Now, Rob, this is Shift Drink. For your Shift Drink, you asked for a golden latte from our neighbors over.
Yes.
At the cup we all race for here in the hotel lobby. This is a beautiful latte with all the turmeric and beautiful ginger.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely
good.
On the spicier
really good.
Side.
Yeah. I like it. And there's something I think that I was reading because I've been drinking ginger and turmeric for a couple of years now, and I kind of started getting into it and seeing that there's stuff where you have to mix in black pepper to activate the chemical within the turmeric, or you actually combine it with the fat of the milk.
Ah,
where you have to do that to unlock certain properties.
What is the magic of the turmeric?
All I know is it's all about inflammation. I think there's a lot of other stuff, but just the fact that inflammation leads to so many sicknesses that are there, and turmeric, along with a lot of ginger. Cannabis and all the CBDs of cannabis are the most anti-inflammatory food or herb that you can intake.
Well, Eddie and I are also activating turmeric with a little additional tipple.
Oh, right. So I was able to not smuggle because I don't want to get in trouble, but I did bring back a couple bottles of Japanese whiskey. Nothing too crazy or fancy. This particular bottle is from the Nika Distillery. They changed their labeling a little bit. This used to be called Nika from the Barrel, which you can go to a Japanese convenience store and buy for $10, like a half-liter bottle.
That right there, that whiskey?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I bought it for $25, but it's really, really solid. You can't find it here in the States. It's kind of like an everyday drinking whiskey.
Nice.
But
big differences between the American whiskey and the Japanese whiskey?
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a
Rob, you just opened up a wormhole.
Well, yeah, I'm not.
See you in an hour. That,
so I'm really curious about the differences. I'm gonna take a hold of this radio show and take it around.
It's as if you've done this before.
Hold on to the reins,
Rob. Japanese whiskey is based off of Scotch, way back in its origins, but they've kind of made it and taken it in their own direction completely. American whiskey has an emphasis on, I'd say, the char of the barrel quite a bit. I think that Japanese whiskey has a huge emphasis on the water and kind of how they treat the aging process a little bit. And they're also very experimental. So they're willing to use all different kinds of barrels, all different kinds of methods. They're for what we think of stereotypically Japanese, which is very beholden to tradition, which I actually want to talk to you about. Great. Oh. They are very innovative.
I mean, it seems like a very innovative culture from the outside with all the trinkets and stuff.
It's
that comes out of that culture.
Different ways of incorporating innovation that we don't necessarily see in our American culture.
Right. I would love to go there someday.
I've
never been there. I would love to. Once we have the kid, it's like the smallest child is 2 years old, so it's we need to get her up to 4 or 5 before it's hell to travel with small kids. So it's better to go somewhere and just kind of settle somewhere. So once they get up to be a little bit older.
And now you have 3 kids.
3 girls.
Did you guys have a fun Mother's Day?
Yeah, it was a total feast. Right, because my mother-in-law and my father-in-law live in the basement. So it was like 3 generations there, you know. It's awesome. So went down to the farmer's market and just got lots of food.
Right. Came on. Back and a lot ate. Of high fives.
Yeah. A lot of hugs, high fives, kisses. It's more like Latina kisses and hugs.
So were you kicked out of the kitchen? Who takes reins in the kitchen?
Oh, me, 100%.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I'm the cook.
Yeah.
All the time. I'm like I've said before, it's like I've now, having my own children, I've realized who I am in my heart and soul. I'm a lesbian grandmother.
Yeah.
So it's like when I get after the reaction of like, what the fuck does that mean? It's like, so I'm a grandmother because I can stay at home all day long and take care of the garden, have chickens and hens and cook food all day long. That's what I like to do. And it's like, but what the fuck is the lesbian about? It's like, because I dig chicks. So my heart and soul, having children show me who I am, my heart and soul.
Yeah, you're a female oriented grandmother.
Definitely see you as a lipstick lesbian.
Can't even talk. Threw him off, Eddie.
Oh, man. And all this revealing before we even get to our first.
You haven't even asked me any questions yet.
Now, as we mentioned before, this is season 2. So, you know, we're going to be mixing it up. 2 truths, 1 lie is now 1 lie, 2 truths. There's more exciting stuff. You're going to have to listen to the whole season 2 to find out what that is. Jack, can you sound effect us?
Two truths, 1 lie.
Dude, I gotta incorporate that shit. Jack, you never came. You never told me about that, man. That's gonna happen on the Sherbert Experience.
You gotta have a segment first. Yeah, you get a game.
Yeah, okay.
Right. I guess. Yeah, let's actually real quick give a shout out to the Sherbert Experience because you do your own show.
Yeah, yeah. Every other Friday at high noon, Dolcezza Sherbert Experience. So it's kind of just, it's not really anything about Dolcezza. It's just a platform where we can bring in guests and talk about things that we're interested in. So it's really cool. I think we've had 5 or 6 shows so far. So
everybody else's show in the network is like radio or podcast or this. And his is an experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've had everything from midwives to the chocolate maker to Eric Hilton was on.
To lesbian grandmothers.
To lesbian grandmothers, psychedelics, pizza makers, coffee roasters. Like right just all the stuff that we're interested in. Just kind of, it's like really cool. It's like a platform where we can bring them in and talk to them about stuff. So,
well, I'm glad we can collaborate here.
Yeah, now you need a game.
Yeah, and you know, Eddie was saying you were recording episodes or some on your travels. That's something that's really cool because there's a lot of people that we would love to talk to that are not here.
We all travel a lot. Yeah. So it would be, you know, remiss if we didn't take a recorder with us. So yeah. I was able to record a couple of episodes with 2 great bartenders, 1 in Seoul and 1 in Tokyo. I'll keep it a mystery.
These are for the DVD extras.
Right. The
after hours.
Shift drink after dark.
Yeah. .com.
All right. 2 truths, 1 lie, Rob. I feel like you've already mentioned you're going to lie to us 3 times.
Well, I have no idea. Two truths and one lie. two truths and one lie. So, okay. So I was, I met my wife drinking ayahuasca. If nobody knows what ayahuasca is, so for those who don't, say hallucinogenic tea that they drink in South America and in Brazil and in the Amazon. So that's one.
Truth number one.
Truth number two.
I'm actually so much bullshit and delirium all day long. It's really he's gonna tell us his next truth. But yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm a lesbian, and I shit strawberries during the local strawberry season.
I believe that.
There's a two right there.
That.
So trying to figure that out, which is which. I was raised in the South, very religious.
These are all truths, by the way.
Yep, I do shit strawberries in Virginia.
Give us one lie.
Well, you can't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, another field game.
Yeah, go to the next one.
All right. So
I just gave you two lies.
Yeah. No, I do know. I mean, you forget I know you. I know that.
Yeah, we go way back, man.
I know all about the ayahuasca, and that's kind of where everything began for you.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Back, I mean, that was like 1999. That was... kind of before it really was a thing. I mean, it's not even really a thing as far as like mainstream, but now if you get into any kind of psychedelic or what's called entheogens via plants, that's something that's kind of having a thing right now.
Yeah.
Where a lot more people are going down to the jungles and having experiences. So in 1999, I just went on my own. I went into the jungles in Peru and said, I want to go see a shaman. Went 4 hours upriver from Iquitos and went into the like a village, and they took me to the edge of the village where there was a hut, and it was they took me into the room with the shaman.
Were there black light posters all over the hut?
Yeah, it was like Jimi Hendrix right there. It was great, the Velvet team.
Rush.
It was like me. So yeah, it was I went into the hut, and the shaman said, I had a translator with me because I didn't speak Spanish, and he offered me a love potion. So when I go to the discotheques in Iquitos to go dancing, I could slip it into the drink of a girl.
Oh, my God.
And then they would fall in love. Imagine that. Like, you know, that's, like, crazy to think about. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I don't want that. I want to come here. I want to see what this whole ayahuasca thing is about.
He's like, oh, right.
And so
ayahuasca.
Oh, I forgot. That would be an interesting shift drink.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I went into the room and just had a hardcore experience that night.
And you met Violeta, and for our listeners, that's his wife and co-owner of Dolceza. That's, you guys met.
Yeah, so that's, so when miles. The first time was 1998 in Iquitos, Peru. I went back to Iquitos, Peru the next year, 99, and also went into the jungle. And then, in 2000, I went to a conference in Manaus, Brazil, where this organized conference with some pretty well-respected ethnobotanists and pharmacologists and anthropologists. And there was about 50 people from all around the world. And at that conference, Violeta was also into that. And she was from Buenos Aires, and so I met her there. And I was living at Portland, Oregon.
This is before Tinder and...
Exactly. It was a total like
all the dating websites.
No apps whatsoever back then. 2000.
Ayahuascadate.com.
Yeah, where you like meet each other as you throw up in front of each other. There's no pretending.
No
there.
Swiping. Well, that's yeah. Like, I mean, there's that's no the impressing. Thing, right? Like the first onset is basically you throw up and kind of.
Oh, it's hardcore. Yeah, it's called in Spanish. It's called La Purga. Which is interesting because the main sickness physiologically in the Amazon is gut parasites. Mm. And so just on a physical level, it really is something that helps them to be more healthy overall is by purging whatever, every quarter, every month, whatever, however often they go to see a shaman for the folk medicine. On a physical level, a physiological level, it actually makes the body there much healthier. And then, you know, all the... the journeys, the visions, and all that. It's a fascinating, fascinating thing.
Yeah.
The whole folk medicine down in the Amazon jungle around it.
Should all people seeking the healing powers of ayahuasca expect to open up a gelato store afterwards? Is that how it works?
Probably shouldn't. I wouldn't recommend it at all.
So, I mean, like you met Violetta. Did you guys travel then and there? Or?
So we met, and then... we basically went to the marketplace at Manaus, which is the largest city in the Amazon, bought hammocks at the marketplace, got on a boat. The boat was kind of like an Indian river taxi that they would come from their villages to sell at the marketplace in Manaus, and then they would go back to their village. And so we got on that boat, hung up taxis. I was the only gringo white guy. Everybody else is all Indians.
And I feel like back then you were even more gringo, right? Like...
Yeah, since I was a little kid, I wanted to get the fuck away from here. I think that has a lot to do with growing up in the South, very sure. religious. So I was like, this place is fucked up. I want to get out. It's like Footloose, you know?
Yeah.
So,
but less dancing.
So I was always kind of like more big. Anti. I would travel all over Europe when I'm in high school, college, and stuff like that. But I probably was more gringo just because I wasn't living in a Latin American family just yet.
Yeah, so. You're kind of outnumbered.
Yeah, very much so by... Latina women all around. It's a good company to keep for sure.
For those of you new to the district, and despite seeing Dolceza all over the DMV, if you know that the first shop was actually located in a narrow corner house high up in Wisconsin Avenue.
R.I.P.O.G. We just closed and sold that building two weeks ago.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you what are your best... I remember when I was introduced to Dolceza first, was writing about it and going up to the Wisconsin shop.
Wow.
So what are your best memories of that little
space? Well, just kind of like finding ourselves, you know? I mean, really, we, back in 2004, when we got into it, we never had made one batch of gelato or ice cream.
What?
We never had a business. We never ran our own business. So we kind of had no idea what we were doing. It was one of those things from living in Buenos Aires, where there's a lot of gelaterias and Italians down there. It was just, if we could do this back in the States, we think it would be good, because there wasn't gelato. There really wasn't much homemade ice cream back in 2003, 2004. So we just jumped into it. I was studying art at the Corcoran, at Fillmore Art Center or something over there in Georgetown. And on the way back home, I saw this for lease sign in the building. I was like, oh, that's, you know, we should check it out. So we called the guy, went in and checked it out. And then one thing led to the next, and that's where we opened up the first store. And never knowing anything about running a business, making gelato, food, and all that, just it began this whole journey of discovery with food, local farms, how to make gelato, how to make coffee.
And back then it was icy, icy, right?
Oh,
icy,
yeah. Icy. You know, we asked Violetta's father, who was like a marketing guy in Buenos Aires, like for the first name. And so he came up with his icy, icy, fresh ice creams. And I hated it from the start. Because the thing is, what happened was we opened, and I would go down to the Ritz-Carlton in Georgetown and say, hey, you know, you're a good restaurant. It was Terrence Fury, who was the chef back there, who was awesome. You know, he came from Striped Bass back in the day in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And he's now up in, I don't know where he is, but he's a great chef and up in Philly, I think. And I would say, I have the best gelato. I'm from Icy Icy. And I was like, that didn't make sense. You know, and so it was like a 7-Eleven, like Slurpee I'm trying to like peddle. So I went back to the family and was like, we got to change the name. It just doesn't translate to like the, you know, local, sustainable, fresh, produced, icy, icy, you know. So I had a big battle. But finally they were like, okay, fuck, we'll change it. And so then we asked my father-in-law again on a train from Torino, Italy to Paris, France for New Year's back in 2005, I think. And he came up with all these names, supported, because he was married to an Italian. So
right.
Dolcezza was one of them. That sounded right. It meant sweetness in Italian, so we went with Dolcezza. So Icy Icy became Dolcezza like 6 months after opening up.
So you actually brought someone from Buenos Aires, a gentleman.
You know what? We did this. The way that we opened Dolcezza was the stupidest way ever. You know, we brought up the architects from Argentina to look at the building, to kind of like give us an idea of the layout, the design. Then we packed up a shipping crate, a container in Buenos Aires, and shipped it up here. Every single, all the bar, all the machines, the windows, the tables, the espresso machine, the display freezer, everything came up from Buenos Aires. And it was stupid because imagine 6 months, you're into your business, the machine breaks down, who the hell you call?
Right.
There's no tech up here. We called a tech. He doesn't read Spanish. There's no schematic for... So it was a disaster. So we had, for the first month, we had somebody up here called the Maestro Heladero, which is ice cream master. And he was Venezuelan living in Argentina, and he lived with us for the first month to start us making batches.
Yeah,
it is. Ice cream master. It's like Jedi or something. Yeah. You know? Obi-Wan. So, yeah, it was hardcore.
Well,
man,
and opening. I feel like back then you were a lot more focused on the Argentinian aspect.
100%. It's like there's 30 flavors year round or whatever down in Argentina in the gelaterias. And so we opened up with dulce leche, dulce leche stracciatella, dulce leche with dulce leche, coconut with dulce leche. I mean, everything with dulce leche.
You're
kind
right.
of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
And so then what happened was, and I was still still working full time, like a software engineer job. Violeta was studying her first quarter ever in English university, at American University.
And Violeta and I were working together
at National Geographic.
National Geographic, yeah.
And so, what was the question?
Just the Argentinian focus.
So we started with the 30 flavors.
What's the difference between Argentinian and Italian?
It's not. It's about the same. It's kind of like the Argentine gelato tradition follows more the Northern Italian gelato tradition. Because you go to Italy, north in the Piemonte region, you have cream. And the gelato, as you go south towards Sicily, you get only milk. You don't get the cream.
Ah, interesting.
So it's like it's hotter down there, and also the economy. In the north, you have more money, so you can buy the most expensive ingredient is the cream. As you go south, it gets warmer and a little bit poorer. And so that's the difference in Italy. And then in Argentina, it's more of the northern Italian gelato tradition.
Saying there's a huge Italian influence in Buenos Aires.
It's like post-World War I and II, you had Italians and Spanish coming to Argentina. So when you go there, it's super European. It's really cool. Buenos Aires is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard like a couple rumors about Buenos Aires and how they almost consider themselves a little bit separate from the rest of South America.
The typical Argentine is, and I love Argentina. I love the Argentinians, but they're unbearable because they believe that they are right in everything, and you can't tell them anything new. If you come down there and start talking to them, it's like, I got it. You can't tell them anything new. It's like they know everything all the time. They're like, it's called conchero. I know everything all the time. You can't tell me anything I don't know. That kind of attitude. So
we're going to take a quick break. When we step back, probably more drugs, more ice cream, and
sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah.
And the break music here from Kido, K-I-E-D-O, on SoundCloud. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, folks. You're here with Shift Drink at the Line Hotel. I'm sitting here next to Matthew Ramsey, a newly shaven Matthew Ramsey.
Man, it's so weird.
I'm touching him right now.
Yeah.
I got a little stubble. And I'm here with Rob Duncan, co-founder of Dolcezza Ice Cream here in Washington, D.C., and actually all over the District, Maryland, and Virginia area.
DMV?
Yep. I wanted to talk about tradition versus innovation. You're really well known for having pretty innovative flavors. Matthew wrote that he remembers when you were doing a flavor for a chef, you made a blue cheese.
Yeah, the Cabrales.
Ice cream.
Yeah. Cabrales. It's like a cheese course, right?
Cheese course. You know, probably there's been several times that we've done blue cheese, but I'll never forget the first one was with the restaurant Taberna del Alabadero, and it was with the guy Santi Sabaleta, who was there, who was like, this is like 10, 11 years ago. And I just never forget him bringing the Cabrales, the queso Cabrales, into the...
you had a whole wheel, I remember.
A whole wheel wrapped in whatever leaf that cheese is wrapped in. And it was the stinkiest thing. My father-in-law, Oscar, he loves the stinky cheese. He spent a year in France and all. And that's one food that I can't appreciate. I can't appreciate brie, camembert, any of that ferment and cheese. Okay. I just reject it. And it's just like this big, stinky, sweaty shoe, man, that we were making this gelato with when... they brought the Cabrales, the blue cheese from Spain.
You go for more of the fresher stuff, the ricotta, the
mozzarella. I'm American cheese eater. It's like it's like very unsophisticated.
Can you do that? Can you make an American cheese, Kraft singles?
Oh yeah, you can make it. That's gelato. Kind of the cool thing with gelato and ice cream. You can make anything. You know, you can put anything into it and play with it. So yeah, you could do that and combine it with different stuff like a cheddar cheese gelato.
So just before coming here, I was rewatching the newest Chef's Table pastry episode about Corrado Asenza from Sicily, and
have you tried his stuff? Amazing. No, I haven't. I haven't. We fantasize about like writing a book and going traveling all around and going to talk to these old gelato masters or people in both Italy and Argentina. Yeah. But I saw that episode, but I've never been there and tried it in person.
And he is so steeped in tradition.
Oh my
and
God.
Really, really focusing
bringing
on the
back
ingredients.
The almonds
and then, but you're also you also have very traditional flavors, but also innovative flavors. Where does the line stand between where you live on between tradition and innovation?
Do you know the thing is this one thing that I hate, I have several pet peeves, you know, it's like plastic plants, toilet paper roll being backwards.
Wait, which way is backwards?
Well, the natural way that you would flip it, you know, you would roll it, so it has to come out over the top.
But Argentina, it's upside down, right?
It's like the other hemisphere. You flush your toilet and it goes around. Exactly, it depends on where you're at. But you know, it's like the flavors of gelato, or for that, any cuisine or food that do not have like a rhyme or a rhythm. So all of the flavors, even though they seem from the outside maybe a little bit wacky, lime cilantro, strawberry tarragon, lemon opal basil, lemon ricotta cardamom, cucumber tarragon gin, yellow peach southern comfort, etc. You know, it's all really based off of something that is kind of true, tested and true and tried out there in the world of cuisine or in the cocktails, like lemon basil, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like a very Italian combination of flavors.
Strawberry tequila is one of my favorite.
Strawberry
all times.
Tequila right now on the menu, and I just got my first bunches of tarragon from Casey and Stacy at DuPont Market Sunday. So that strawberry tarragon will be coming on. The lime cilantro we also picked up. The
bitter orange mezcal.
Yeah, the bitter orange mezcal. Shout out to Matt and the Legal Mezcal that we did. That's the collab that we did.
Yeah, really fun.
So it's all, you know, it's really trying to find. The cocktails are great for using fruits and herbs and spices and liqueurs and all that. So that's a great motivation. And also, you know, to being at the farmers and having tarragon and cantaloupe being seasoned and one of the ladies saying, man, have you ever had the cantaloupe with chopped up tarragon on it, just eating it fresh? And then that became a sorbet, for example. Mm-hmm. So I really like to have it. It's like being true to tradition, a little bit kind of what you're talking about, Japan, but pushing it and kind of reinventing it, but also having a connection to the tradition, which I think is really important. All right, it's at least the aesthetic that I'm always attracted to. It's a classics, you know, and you can even go into all the shops that we have, and I do all the design and it's all really classic material, whether it's mosaic floor or 14th and P, that floor, or the wharf, just all wood crafted,
right.
And stone and glass and steel, you know. So I'm attracted to that more traditional and classic design or the menu of flavors.
Has your philosophy on gelato changed over the years since you guys, I mean, I, I,
you know, the philosophy maybe not so much has, but the understanding of the importance of tech and gelato. I never studied tech or food or any of that, and it was all like more kind of a grandma approach of like sticking your finger in it and putting a little more salt in the soup, you know, that kind of thing, where you're not following a recipe. And that's really how everything happened. And we just dialed into it through trial and error. In the last couple of years, 2 or 3 years, just with the growth of our team, and so we have new members of our team, and they have more of an emphasis on the tech and a more understanding on it. So we, you know, would send our COO over to a class in Toronto or a class in Wisconsin, and he would go get an actual gelato making class and understand the science. And coming back and bringing that knowledge made such a huge difference on our texture and the balance of our gelato, and just so, which didn't make sense because it's pastry,
right.
And you know the importance of precision in a pastry kitchen. You know, you got if grams off, and your souffle won't rise or the texture of it. So that's something I really learned, is the importance of balancing the tech with the kind of the craft of the ingredient and everything.
Well, now you're starting to wholesale across the country.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
It's kind of fun to have a DC experience kind of branching out.
Yeah, so we're about in 400, 500 markets right now in the U.S., so in about 90 Whole Foods up and down, like from New York all the way down to Georgia. We're rolling out in Fresh Market, all 177 of them. Central Market, who's like the kind of the Central Market is kind of like the darling of the natural food market in Texas. There's 10 of them, and they're kind of like you have Buy-Right Market in San Francisco. You have right. Central Market, Texas. You had Brooklyn Kitchen up in New York. You had these figures kind of who were doing this.
I love Buy-Rights. 15,
yeah, they're amazing. Oh, the Buy-Right Creamery that was came off of the market and so Sam good. There. Yeah, really cool. So we're going to be rolling into Central Market with all
very cool.
7 flavors in about another month. So it's kind of cool. That's a whole other area, too, as far as the world of grocery, you know?
Yeah.
It's very different from retail.
Now, we were talking about tech and how you're constantly changing and tweaking things around. Maybe we shift gears and Dolcezza is also known for really great coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, and recently, I believe Matthew noticed that you switched over from Stumptown to another producer up in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what made that decision? What were you looking for? What ticked you into change?
So Stumptown, with me living in Portland, Oregon back in 98, 99, and then 2000, that was kind of when Stumptown opened back then. And I lived right up the street from them. So it's kind of like the first day they opened the doors, I went in there. And that was my paradigm shifter for coffee.
Sure.
I coming from the East Coast, shit coffee, lived in San Francisco, had Pete's coffee. That was really good. That was the best. And then when I went to Stumptown, you know, it was just like, it blew me away. I mean, it's the same thing, I swear, with everything, with cannabis especially.
Yeah.
Going from the seedy, cramped down brick shit.
Yeah.
And then you have somebody that grew this in their house and their lights and the genetics, right? It's like, it's chemically, it's totally different, you know? So, and the same thing goes with coffee, all the aromas and all that. So my mark was made by Stumptown, and that was a long time coming to have Stumptown here. And we had an exclusive relationship with them for 5 years, and they were awesome. That's amazing people. We really met a lot of the people, key people in the company from Portland, New York, and all that. But before that, we had a multi-roaster program for years in place. And so we would work for 2 months with Counterculture, 2 months with Ritual, 2 months with Intelligentsia, 2 months with Verve. And there's a lot happening in the world of coffee. And we also like
great.
That.
They're all third wave.
The third wave is what they call it. So this new roaster called Say, which is Yes spelled backwards. They were Lofted Coffee. They were Lofted Coffee, but then they got, I think they had someone else had Lofted, so they had to change their name. But these kids, Lance, his name's Lance Tobin, and then another guy, Eric. Lance was a roaster with Stumptown in New York, and that's kind of where he cut his teeth learning roasting. And then he moved into, he started roasting in his loft in Brooklyn. And they're more of, I don't even know if they call it the fourth wave, but it's more the Nordic approach of roasting coffee, which is a lighter roast.
I think we all know what that means.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know until like 3 months ago, because it's like within our company, as we've grown, it's no longer myself doing everything. You know, back in the day, it was me doing, squeezing every single lemon, mixing every single batch of gelato, hiring, firing, cleaning, opening, closing. So now we have... our team, who coffee director, who they are out there hungry and going to the events and
shout out
that.
Wahid.
Yeah, so Wahid is a CEO who is the master tech, and that's really kind of really introduced our the renovation of the factory. We now homogenize our gelato, which is insane.
Homogenization.
Which is really like no small batch ice cream maker really does homogenization, because it's like $75,000 machine, and it's. It's pretty hardcore. So Wahid really put the tech into our product. And then Victor Vasquez, who's been with us for like 12 years, he really came up through working with us, and now is kind of he was the coffee director, and now his sister Natalie is the coffee director, and Victor's kind of the culinary director doing the menu at the Wharf. So he's the one that introduced me to this whole Nordic approach with roasting, which is just, it's a lighter roast. It's just like meat, but you know,
we just got to figure it out.
the more you burn your cook your meat or your coffee bean, the more of the char and the roast that you'll taste in the profile. So the lighter you go, it allows the nuance of the actual bean and the coffee grower and the terroir and the region to actually be
expressed.
Accents
of watermelon and berry.
So it's really interesting, you know. So I never stop learning.
Now you
about
are
coffee.
You are cooking stuff, food at the New Wharf location.
Yeah.
When can we expect a Sicilian style ice cream sandwich on the brioche?
We're talking about that.
Are you really?
Because we have, we're talking about a lot of stuff, like doing like fried cannoli. We have a fryer in the Wharf, so doing a fried cannoli, sticking it in the soft serve nozzle, soft serve inside, then chocolate dip it and sealing it. You know, Matt, that'd be insane.
That'd be awesome.
I was just trying to get, fuck the brioche.
Yeah, we're going,
we talk about with the brioche.
Yeah.
Booyah.
Right on. It's no secret that you're growing some pretty amazing weed right now.
Well, so yeah, legal cannabis is in what is it, Initiative 71.
Yeah.
For the last year, honestly, I've like had to take a break with the birth of all these kids and everything. Yeah. So it's like it just takes a lot of time to grow really, really, really good cannabis.
Sure.
And so right now I have no flowering, but I mean the little secret of it's called Dolcezza Sherbert experience, because sherbert is one of these varieties of cannabis that I came across from.
I love it.
It's called Crockett Family Farms out of the Sierra Nevadas, California. It's a third generation cannabis grower. He remembers being little boy watering the plants that his grandfather was growing back in the days. And so there's this variety that I've come across called Sour Banana Sherbert. The genetics in cannabis are insane, what's going on right now. But it's just one of those things, you know. It's just, I've been smoking dope. I mean, I remember going in 1998 to Amsterdam just to go find the bud that won the High Times Cannabis Cup back then. My brother and I made pilgrimage like nine times. We would go to Amsterdam, you know. But...
When can I buy a sticker and receive ganja gelato?
Never. I never, you know, as
free
a
gift.
Rule of karma, I never have sold anything. It's all like a nug of gift, you know.
Yeah.
It's like I just coming up in Georgia, being raised in like Newt Gingrich's district.
Yeah.
We'll put the fear of God as far as a goddamn drug war in this country.
So
you
we will never have the marrying of these two wonderful things that you make.
You know, here's the thing about
gelato.
So the gelato, cannabis-infused gelato, I've never tried it before. You know, it's like cannabis is fat-soluble, which means you can just put a bud in a thing of butter, cook it, or whatever, and then that fat will take off the THC, the CBDs of it. So you could really make good... high dose gelato. But the thing, you know, I all comes back to the amount of time. I don't have time for edibles. Edibles, you can get into some sticky shit, you know? It's like that takes hours to shake off. And it's like, what if my 2-year-old wakes up and I got to be responsive? It's like, more of like Something like smoking that you can kind of get high and come back down from.
Right.
Be at the ready. So
yeah, I guess, yeah.
I mean, at least it means you have a hand and you taste everything that you produce. So that's good.
It's all the same thing. Rock. Coffee, cannabis, gelato, you know. It's like trying to dial into the best way of doing it.
And on one of our previous episodes, great bartender Don Lee, also a great cannabis aficionado, he has like an emergency apocalypse cannabis, what would we call it? His little package? Plan.
Yeah, what was it? I forget. It's like break in case of emergency.
An emergency kit.
Yeah.
So what's, just in case all shit.
Well, that or what you absolutely have to have on hand when you know that you've taken too much or.
That's why I think it's good to. So you're saying.
Well, what do you have in yours?
If you take, like if you get in too deep. Nah, is that what you're saying?
We were talking about curating like the perfect weed experience.
Yes, yes.
And Don Lee chose Doritos and caviar as his curated experience.
That's hilarious. I'm the opposite. Yeah. I'm like on the top of a mountaintop, full moon, nobody out, the breeze is blowing, and then I'm kind of different, I think, than. Most people I come across, it's like they're more about like the getting smashed and hanging out and like just getting fucked up and all that. I like it when everybody's asleep and I'm not, and I like to go out on my back deck and then I like to just smoke to where I get to the point where I ask myself, oh shit, did I smoke too much?
Yeah.
That's the territory that I like. I really think it's like, because it's like, where do your ideas come from?
Sure.
A lot of my ideas come from that space of like, rupturing the mundane plane, and then you're out in the bellows.
Yeah,
and you got to learn how to navigate out in the bellows. You know,
for those of you listeners who can't see Rob right now, he's
I'm flapping like a bird.
Yeah, he's flapping his wings.
Talk about cannabis too much. And I start flapping my wings.
Well, are you? I mean, I know that parenthood changes things, but are you? I know personally, I create more in the late night. I'm a night owl. That's my thing.
Yeah, I remember that about you all the time.
Is that, would you say that's kind of your thing too?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Because the notion of when you have three kids, you know, it's like the notion of space, you, your own thing, kind of by yourself on your own, you disappear. So yeah, it's like in the nighttime when everybody's asleep and in bed, like whatever, 10:45, that's kind of like my time for a couple of hours.
The hell of the moon.
When there's nobody up, you know, to go out and just do my own thing. So it's something that's really important for me too, when it's like either doing the menu, doing design of the packaging, doing a build out of the store, writing descriptions for flavors, this and that. I, 100% of all ideas have come from that space, 100%, over and over and over. So it is actually, you know, scientific is something that you can do repeatedly, right?
Yeah,
that's something that's like I need that break to then all of a sudden it's like, aha, that's, I never thought about that, and then I write it down or draw it out and stuff like that. So yeah, that just space in general, I think that's where all creativity can come into the experience, is through space. Because if you're so jam cramped and you don't have any space and any time, it's hard to get new insights to certain things.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that's very refreshing to hear in this very busy time of
ours. Yeah, connected all the time.
It's very, very industry of you. I think I wrote...
I've never been called industry.
I think I wrote 80% of my book after the hours of 1 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, that's always been a time for me. There's something about the feeling of everybody else is asleep and I'm the only one that's up. I love that time. And always back in college, I would never go to sleep until like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning all through college, you know. I love that twilight.
Yeah.
That moment.
Well, I think we're getting to that point in the show where we're going to ask you a bunch of questions, Rob.
All right.
This is payback.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire. So we're going to ask a bunch of questions, and this is kind of just first thing that comes to mind, tip of the tongue. So Eddie, why don't you start us off here?
Cone or bowl?
Bowl.
Do you cheat with any outside ice cream brands?
All the time.
What flavor?
Ben and Jerry's is my go-to. I love the peppermint cookies. Tonight though is like also fucking crazy.
I fucking love that. Yeah.
Chunks, man. Ben and Jerry's are they're the best. Well,
you had them on your show, right?
Yeah, Ben. We've been down several times. We had an event with them. Super cool. Just an old school hippie, you know. Just really, really cool. which is not to detract from Rapid Fire, but you know the thing is, you know what made them put chunks in their gelato? He had a really bad sense of taste. He still does. And so they had to cram so much of the chunks into it so he could taste it. And that's where all the chunks of the Ben & Jerry's. Really cool.
Did you guys do like a little trade-off exchange?
He ate all the stuff, and he said it was really good. But then Pema, my 8-year-old, was sitting at the table, and she said something like, I forget what she said, something like, she's like, Ben & Jerry's is much better than Dolcetz.
I was like, God damn it, Pema.
Oh, no, but Ben,
that's okay.
Ben & Jerry's. That's okay. It is totally okay. There's a lot about Ben & Jerry's. It's really good.
What is your most unusual nighttime or morning ritual?
Damn, I think we just talked about that. Yeah. Honestly, it's not unusual for me, but flapping my wings, howling at the moon, looking for ideas and inspire. it's all about the plants. None of my ideas. It's all the plants' ideas. Is what I say to everybody.
This kind of goes back to the Georgetown store closing recently. What's your probably most memorable evening in that? In that space.
You know, with you and AJ and spinning blood orange and smoking dope down in the kitchen with the gelato machines. It was somebody's birthday, right?
Yeah, I think it was like Vio's or...
Yeah, somebody. We had like the whole, like all of our old school friends with Anastasia and Natalia and you, AJ. And I remember fresh blood orange sorbet coming out of the machine.
It was
like we were passing like the joint around the kitchen. So I just have to say that, you know.
Okay. Good, I'm glad we're on the same page here.
What is something mischievous that you've done lately, recently?
Damn, I'm boring in a way. I mean, every day I climb underneath a fence or jump over a fence to go skateboarding. I mean, it's like that kind of freaks my 8-year-old out, so that could be mischievous.
Yeah.
Like second nature to me.
And you're teaching your children how to
skate. Yeah, my two little girls. And, you know, the 2-year, I'm building a ramp in my backyard. But, yeah, they go skating at the bowl.
That's awesome.
For a couple times a week. They're good. They're really, like, they learn transition. Like a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old girl, it's like, it's awesome.
Somebody that owns a date spot destination, what is your idea of the perfect DC date night? I know you don't really have...
Jesus, you know, we just came to Rakes here just this past weekend. Okay. That was awesome. I want to go to Maydown. I haven't been there. What is our go-to... Like, again, date nights like every 2 months. I love Seki, man. Seki Izakaya is just awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm so out of the game now. I mean, Bialetta and I used to be hounds on the street, all the restaurants, everything opening. But now we're lucky if we get a date every month to get out. But, you know, try to stay in touch with what's going on.
On priorities, right?
Yeah. You're about to have that.
Yeah.
Deathbed meal?
Damn. A chicken fingers from Houston's, which is now Woodmont Grill. I love that shit. Chicken fingers.
What's your go-to sauce?
Fucking honey mustard, but it's actually not that. It's like they don't serve it here. It's like the Dijon mustard sauce. So the honey Dijon mustard, which they don't have up here, but they have back in Atlanta.
Okay.
When I go back, it's like it's got that extra kick to it. So yeah, the chicken fingers, man. It's just such a comfort food. The chicken. My brother and I went on the whole search for like 6 months of the best chicken finger in Houston's. Ended the whole search.
Oh man. All right.
Well, who does it? Where do you get your fix here?
There was the Houston's up in Bethesda.
Oh, right.
That changed its name to Woodmont Grill. And they changed it like 2 months ago where chicken fingers, you can't order anymore after 5 p.m. So we go now at like 4. We got a reservations at 4 p.m. whenever we go now.
I love how much you know about this.
Anything that I do like obnoxiously OCD.
I cannot imagine eating chicken fingers before 4 p.m., honestly.
Oh, have no idea when I got there. The day that they implemented that policy, we got there at like 5:15. And you have no idea the disappointment. Yeah. So that's what I would do when I'm dying.
Is there a fear that you would like to overcome?
Man, I guess all of us, the fear of death, right?
Sure.
Not to go too dark on this.
I mean, to be fair, deep, I overcame yesterday. So
congratulations. I'm all good. Thank you. I'll have to hang out. I guess it was that shaving the lip.
Yeah.
Is that the trick?
Shave the mustache, shave the fear.
I don't know, man. You know, we all have a fear of being exposed, I think, for we're all here actors on a fucking stage. So it's like we're all kind of like pretending, right?
Yeah.
That we know what we're doing, what's going on. We have no fucking clue, man. Just think about this. The stat is the following. We're on a goddamn planet in the galaxy called the Milky Way that has approximately 1 trillion stars. In the known universe, there are approximately 1 trillion other galaxies out there, each with its own set of 1 trillion stars. To assume that you know anything, we don't know where we come from.
That's a lot of gelato.
We don't know where we're going. It's like, so yeah, maybe so we're all like actors on the stage. Yeah, so I think everybody has this
little atom in a bowl of gelato.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 1 little gram in a bowl that you're smoking.
Need the gelato, is what I'm saying. All right.
Okay.
Too deep for shift drink?
Nah, man, that's exactly where we like to take it.
We just reach that edge, that arm flappy edge.
What's your beatbox?
I think it's time.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Let's do it.
Is it time?
Yeah.
I think it's time to play a little game of Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Fuck, Marry, Kill.
All right, so these are 3 ingredients that you use a lot.
Easy peasy, man.
We're going to make you choose.
Okay.
So you got to fuck one, you have to marry another, and you have to kill one.
Okay, all right.
Mascarpone.
Oh, fuck the hell out of mascarpone.
Opal basil. Strawberry.
So I'm fucking mascarpone, the nice creamy cheese. So we got to. So you say fuck one, kill another one, and what?
Mary.
Mary strawberry. I'll kill the opal basil.
Sorry, Violetta. All right, that works for me.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, man. It's been good to be on the other side of the mic.
Yeah.
Good to see you guys, and thanks for having me on. Sorry, I canceled last week.
All good. We're transitioning from season 1 to season 2.
Cool.
So
perfect timing.
So thanks for joining us this week. You can revisit this week's episode or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts. And find us online on all the social media as at ShiftDrinkDC. Also, if you're on iTunes, go ahead, hit the like button. Or is it like or rating button?
Subscribe.
Subscribe. Give
rate,
us a little,
subscribe, like,
a little
all
review.
Of it. Hump it.
Matthew's mom likes us.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
You know what? TJ Lewis recently wrote a review.
Oh.
Who's TJ Lewis?
That's all you needed to know.
Okay. Good. Go, TJ. Thanks, TJ. We appreciate it. Whoever the
Shout
fuck
out.
You are.
A special thank you to Jeffrey Lemereau for our intro music and DJ RecTech for the hilarious sound effects. Maybe we'll make some for your show, Rob.
Coming soon.
Yep.
I want to exhale of smoke.
That's right. Next week, Bill Murray will be in the house to discuss all of his favorite Sandos, peanut butter and jellyfish being number 1. Until next week, hasta la pasta, my rasta brasta.
I was not going to say that.